The Fed is doing the twist.
But for some reason, everyone's focused on the shout.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles. Hello, I'm Steve Chiotakis.
And I'm Jeremy Hobson. It's the Marketplace Midday Update, our podcast from Marketplace.org. Today is Thursday, September 22nd.
Coming up, the economic ramifications if Palestinians go ahead with seeking UN acceptance of its statehood.
Notice there are only a few used cars left on the lot. There's a reason for that.
And later, why is everyone on Facebook so averse to change?
That story and others coming up on the Marketplace Midday. Day update.
Let Marketplace be your guide to the modern world. Subscribe to the Marketplace Tech Report podcast. Find it on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
Well, markets are plummeting in early trading this morning despite the Federal Reserve's new efforts to help the economy.
In the Fed's analysis that came out yesterday, it said the economy stinks. Well, that's my word. But that about sums up their report, right, Jeremy?
Absolutely.
Slow growth.
Check.
The abysmal housing market.
Got that.
No jobs.
We know that we have that.
Yeah, exactly. But what about the Fed's response?
Why aren't markets bouncing back with news that the Fed is using tools not seen since the 1960s to reignite the recovery?
Let's get some perspective now. First, from overseas, where markets plummeted today as much as 5 and 6%. The BBC's Andrew Walker is with us from London. Hi, Andrew.
Hi there, Steve.
Why the big global reaction to the Fed's decision?
It is slightly curious in some ways because, of course, what the Fed is doing is taking action that's intended to stimulate the rapidly flagging economic recovery. So in some circumstances, the markets might well be expected to take that positively. This time, however, I think partly they're focused on the Fed's negative comments, the warning about significant downside risks. Also, I think there is an increasing feeling that although central bank action is probably at the very least harmless, there's an awful concern brewing, I think, that maybe they are beginning to run out of effective tools. And so the Fed's action, I think, has just made markets focus on that downside. There's been a few other little bits of bad news, particularly some manufacturing data out of China. But I think it's the Fed and the implications that the markets see from the statement that is really focusing their minds.
Andrew, we already knew that the economy isn't doing very well, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You might well say, why on earth did the markets need the Fed to tell them that there are significant downside risks? They should have worked that out already. And I think they did. But we're into this kind of environment, I think, where an awful lot is dependent on sentiment, perhaps more than is usually the case. And so you do sometimes get markets responding in a perhaps rather unexpected way. And I think that's what we've had this time.
What about other central banks, Andrew, around the world? Will they react similarly to the Fed? Will more stimulus be put into the global economy?
I think probably yes. We've already had an indication a few hours before the Fed's latest move from the Bank of England that it's very seriously considering doing something. The European Central Bank is a little bit further behind on this kind of issue because it has actually been raising interest rates in the last few months. But the odds, I think, must be increasing very rapidly that the European Central Bank will reverse those moves before very long.
The BBC's Andrew Walker in London. Andrew, thank you.
My pleasure, Steve.
What the Fed specifically announced yesterday is that it's changing its investments in an attempt to drive down long-term interest rates, most notably those for mortgages. The operation is called The Twist. We're going to get reaction now from Diane Swonk, chief economist with Mesirow Financial. She's with us from Chicago, as she is every Thursday. Good morning.
Good morning.
So first of all, Diane, break through the jargon of The Twist here. What is this action by the Fed really supposed to be doing?
Well, it's supposed to be discouraging investors from doing exactly what they're doing and getting money off the sidelines, making more risky bets in the equity market instead of the treasury market.
Well, but we'd also heard that this was supposed to make mortgages easier to get for ordinary people.
Well, it doesn't exactly make mortgages easier to get, but it is expected to lower mortgage rates, which it is doing. Of course, mortgage rates and low rates aren't the only problem in the mortgage market these days.
Well, now, why, going back to what you were saying in the beginning there, why are the markets doing exactly the opposite of what the Fed wanted them to do?
Well, in part because the Fed validated their worst fears that, in fact, the risks of a recession are quite substantial, stemming from the global financial market crisis going on in Europe. And, in fact, overnight, the situation in Europe looks like it intensified in terms of being a crisis, and we also got some bad news from China. So just that validation from the Fed, because they talk to central bankers around the world every day, that was a validation of a reality we already knew, but we didn't really want to be. Have it be credible.
Diane Swank, Chief Economist with Mesirow Financial, thanks as always.
Thank you.
So are the big drops we're seeing in global stocks today a panic?
Marketplace's economics correspondent Chris Farrell joins us now to discuss that. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Jeremy.
Well, what is considered a market panic?
Well, market panic, 1987, stock market falls by about 25%. That is a market panic. Essentially what happens, and it's happened throughout our history, the first one was in 1792, or that's the one that we talk about with William Dewar, who was a friend of Alexander Hamilton, the first Treasury Secretary. What happens in a market panic is that institutions, the big buyers, they realize that there's danger. They realize they're going to lose a lot of money. They withdraw from the market. Sellers realize, hey, there's no buyers. We've got to lower our price. And then a market panic sets in and it feeds on itself in a downward spiral.
But doesn't it always turn out afterwards that these investors go, that was a real mistake? Why did we panic so much?
Well, of course. And he also wondered during the boom times, how could so many people be so stupid to borrow so much money to invest? So in a way, though, it's very rational, the actions that are happening. That's what's so scary about panics. And that's why panics exist, because what happens is that these institutions are protecting themselves. They realize that they could lose a lot of money. They withdraw from the market. But that withdrawal from the market is what feeds the panic itself.
Well, is there economic thought out there about how to stop these panics from happening?
There's a very simple way to stop a panic, and the classic example is 1907, stock market panic, J.P. Morgan, the legendary investment banker. He said, stop. We are backing the system. And it worked. And then we created the Federal Reserve. One of its jobs is during a market panic, for example, in 1987 and in 2008, the Federal Reserve says, stop. We will support the financial system. Don't panic. Yes, you can knock down the value of stocks or bonds or whatever, but there's no need to panic.
Do you think we're in a period right now where we're prone to market panics? Do we know if we're prone to market panic?
We're absolutely prone to market panics because we've moved toward a world of computers and algorithms, and they move so fast. They move faster than human judgment. So we're more prone to it than ever before, and we have a situation where it could happen, it could not happen, because of all the uncertainty that's out there about the economy and Europe.
Marketplace economics correspondent Chris Farrell, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Gold, which usually goes up when investors get scared, Jeremy, well, that's down 3.5% today at the time of this broadcast. It seems investors are instead fleeing to the safety of government bonds. The interest rate on 10-year U.S. bonds has fallen to an all-time low of 1.77%.
You know, every time it gets down, I sort of feel like it's not going to go any lower, and then it does a few days later. Well, fewer Americans filed for first-time weekly jobless claims last week. That's some good news. Yeah. The Labor Department said applications shrank by 9,000, but still not nearly enough to shrink the unemployment rate.
The two big American generals in China, General Electric and General Motors, thank you, are going to add electric car charging stations in Shanghai. Hmm. It's a pilot project for the two companies. GM, by the way, plans to introduce its electric car, the Volt, in China sometime in December.
You can check out more numbers at our website, marketplace.org.
Do you enjoy the music we play between stories? Visit the Marketplace Music section to browse playlists for all of our programs and to buy those songs on Amazon. A percentage of each purchase goes towards supporting our programs. Find more online at marketplace.org/music.
And now the Marketplace Global Perspective. A top Palestinian official says President Mahmoud Abbas will push forward with a vote on full entry into the United Nations. And the U.S. is expected to veto that proposal at the U.N. Security Council.
After that, Palestinians vow to then go to the U.N. General Assembly, where a majority of countries are expected to vote in favor. For businesses on both sides of the debate, there are a lot of possible economic repercussions.
Reporter Daniel Estrin is with us now from Jerusalem with the latest on that. Good morning, Daniel.
Good morning.
Who are Israel's main trading partners? What would happen to them if this UN vote goes forward as planned?
Well, Israel's biggest trade partners are the U.S. and European Union countries. The economy in Israel is pretty robust. Half of exports are in the high-tech sector. Israel exports computers and software and also technologies like drip irrigation for agriculture, defense systems, which Israel's military often develops in connection with Israeli industry. So the U.S. and Europe also trade with the Palestinians, but to a lesser extent. Now, there's a fear in Israel that Palestinian statehood recognition in the UN could lead to public pressure on companies to stop doing business with Israel, and that could deal a serious blow to the Israeli economy. But in many ways, it's very hard to simply boycott all Israeli products, because then you'd have to boycott things like laptop computers, because many big-name computer companies build their products with chips developed in Intel labs in Israel.
Would this UN vote, Daniel, mean a change on the ground for the Palestinian economy?
Well, that depends on how the politics of this vote play out. I asked Palestinian businessman Ibrahim Barham how he'd feel the day after if the Palestinians do win the vote, and he said it would make him feel more confident to invest in the Palestinian economy.
Myself and most of the Palestinian business people will look for it positively, and we're going to invest more in our economy, and we're going to feel more secure because we're going to see that things going to change, so we're going to see it a good opportunity for us as businesses to invest more.
But there are other factors here too. Congress has been debating for months about scrapping millions of dollars in aid to the Palestinians if they go through with this UN statehood bid. And an Israeli diplomat has also hinted that Israel could withhold transferring tax money it collects on behalf of the Palestinians. And Israel has done that a few times before. So without all that money, the Palestinian economy could simply collapse.
All right. Daniel Estrin joining us from Jerusalem. Daniel, thank you.
Thanks.
CarMax reported this morning its earnings were up slightly, and quarterly used car sales rose between 4 and 5% over last year. The used car market's been doing well lately because buyers are anxious about the economy and don't want to buy new, which means there are fewer used cars for sale. Marketplace's Elisa Roth reports.
Bill Willis is offering $50 to anybody who finds him a good used car. He owns three dealerships in Delaware, including one that only sells used vehicles.
Supply is hard to get. That's our problem, supply. Good quality, low mileage used cars are becoming less and less existent.
New vehicle sales have dropped dramatically since the financial crisis, and people are hanging on to their cars for longer. Leasing has also fallen off, so there isn't that regular flow of three-year-old cars coming onto the market, and rental car companies aren't supplying as many as they used to either. Willis says in some cases, used cars have gotten so expensive, customers are reconsidering and looking at new ones instead, especially with cheaper vehicles like a Chevy Malibu or a Ford Focus.
Boy, do I go ahead and spend $15,000 for a pre-owned or $20,000 for a new. The financing rates are generally better on a new vehicle than they are a used vehicle. So all those things come into play, and that's where you have to weigh the options.
But not everybody's weighing those options. Joe Spina is an analyst at Edmunds.com. He says the traditional used car buyer isn't interested.
A lot of used buyers won't even go to the new lot. I mean, they'll just go looking for a used car, and you know, they're on the used car lot. They don't compare to the new car, and then they buy the used.
That's one reason used car prices will probably stay high for a while. Another is that nobody expects the pool of used cars to grow anytime soon. I'm Elisa Roth for Marketplace.
A late-night hotspot in Manhattan's East Village, Jeremy. You lived in New York.
I lived near the East Village, yes.
Did you really? Okay. Hired a bouncer to work the overnight shift. That's nothing new. There are a lot of spots, right? People go late night to these spots. Unfortunately, the bouncer works now at the IHOP, at International House of Pancakes, to keep bar-hopping diners who enjoyed too many cocktails under control. You know it's a tough job to be a bouncer at any bar, right? Imagine rowdy drunks who are hungry.
It's a no-win situation.
It can get really nasty fast. I just hope the guy's paid with more than just flapjacks, though.
More than 20,000 nurses and healthcare workers are planning to walk off the job today in California. They're angry over benefit cuts and other concessions hospital groups Kaiser Permanente and Sutter Health are seeking. But Marketplace's Bob Moon reports it'll be a short strike, and that's by design.
A small group started their picketing yesterday, but most of the workers joining them today will be striking for only a single day. That's enough to make some noise. But can a limited strike be as effective as an open-ended walkout? National Union of Healthcare Workers Vice President John Bortzos spoke to us from the picket line.
It's like a shot across the bow to the employer. The idea is to try to get the employer to bargain in good faith and to do it in a way that's least disruptive to patient care.
Bortzos says this strategy has produced results in the past.
There's other healthcare providers that have been willing to agree to contracts short of full-blown strikes.
That's what the Health Workers Union and the California Nurses Association are hoping for in this case. But Sutter Health says it has an obligation to keep health care affordable. And Kaiser issued a statement calling the strike unnecessary. It says it's already bargaining in good faith. In Los Angeles, I'm Bob Moon for Marketplace.
Facebook holds its developers conference today in San Francisco. It is planning some changes to the site, in addition to the ones that it unveiled yesterday to a not-so-great reception. And as Marketplace's Jennifer Collins reports, those changes may seem small compared to what's coming.
Media consultant Ted Cohen says Facebook's about to let you and your friends share music more easily.
If I see that a friend of mine is listening to the Chili Peppers on Spotify.
Spotify is a music subscription service.
And I have Spotify. It's going to let me hear the Chili Peppers on my Spotify account.
In Facebook, Cohen thinks you'll soon be able to listen to any band on any service and watch TV shows and movies friends recommend, too. Lucy Hood is with the USC Marshall School of Business.
It's the ultimate killer app. What I want, when and where I want it.
That's good for Facebook because the social network would then have you where it wants you, when it wants, for advertisers. And for the media companies, Cohen says,
for people who haven't subscribed to any of these services, the path to listening to a song
and potentially signing up as a subscriber
is a very short walk.
That is, if they can get past the usual user revolt. I'm Jennifer Collins for Marketplace.
And finally, Steve, about that usual user revolt that Jennifer just talked about, we may think we're okay with change, but really, who are we kidding? I mean, when it comes to the internet, we seem to like things to look the same. If you think about the biggest sites on there, Google, Yahoo, YouTube,
Google has
Wikipedia,
looked the same
they
forever,
look exactly
right?
The same as they did when they started, or at least almost exactly the same. But Facebook, okay, you know, punish them if you want to, but they want to go out there and stay fresh. They made these alterations yesterday to the homepage. They added a ticker, make photos a little bigger. What's the big deal? But the reaction is just scathing. One user I saw said, I signed up for Google Plus today. Another called it ridiculous.
Ridiculous.
And my favorite, TV host Joy Behar tweeted.
Well, you got to do it in Joy Behar voice.
I'm not going to do
on,
it.
You've
no,
got to
no
do
way.
It.
No, no way. But here's what she said. I've wasted so much valuable time trying to figure out the new Facebook. I've barely had time to play solitaire on my iPad. The sacrifices we make. In Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
And I'm Steve Chiatakis. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
And this is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.